How many of you have heard a sermon on angels? Not a lot of you. How many of you thought this morning or any time in the last few days about your guardian angel? And I heard the story. I understand your very, very high awareness of an intervening factor in your journey. That is a very significant and wonderful experience. We don't often talk about our guardian angels, and yet they are with us all the time. They're a part of your life. My guardian angel is a part of my life. And I think that it pays occasionally, maybe more often, to be of some benefit when we pay attention to that. I titled this sermon this morning, Angel Memories. Consider how long angels live. How many of us have each one of them, how many of us have each of them accompanied throughout our lifetimes or their lifetime? When God created them, He didn't intend for any of them to die ever. When God created us, He didn't intend for us to die. Well, we have rather short memories, but angels don't. And think of what they can share with us over the years of eternity that have happened in our short lives here now. The first mention of angels in the King James Version of the Bible is in Genesis 16. Anybody know who that's about? It's about Hagar. Here we have an example of God's love in action, even when humans make poor choices. Childless Sarai had suggested to Abraham that he take her maid, Hagar, as a wife, so that Abraham would have a child. And this kind of sounded like, oh, is that really what I want to do? But he said, okay, we'll do this. And then when Hagar realizes she is pregnant, she starts feeling superior to Sarai. That doesn't set well with Sarai. And so the constant interplay of emotions and people that you see as you read this story, Sarai comes to Abraham and says, I don't like this. And what does Abraham do? He tells her, well, it was your suggestion, now you take care of it. And so what does Sarai tell her maid? Well, she may not have said anything particularly, but she made life very harsh for Hagar. And Hagar says, I am out of here. This is enough. And heads out into the wilderness. And what happens? Suddenly, an angel finds her. Well, that angel was probably with her all the time, wasn't he? And what does he tell her? Go back. Go back. and put up with Sarai, serve her well. And so now we have a situation where a pregnant woman is serving a lady that is not really all that friendly. But Ishmael is born. And you can remember the story. But in the chronology of how this works, about 15 years later, 14 or 15 years later, after Ishmael is born, we have the story of the angels visiting Abraham and promising him that actually Sarah is going to have a child. So angels are back in the story. And about a year later, this really happens. And now Isaac is born. And what happens now? Well, Isaac gets weaned, and we don't know how old this young man is at that point in time, this young boy. But typical in those days, this child is probably somewhere in the 5-year-old range. They nursed them for a long time. So maybe 20 years after this original story begins, we have a celebration of the weaning. And what happens there is that now this teenager, Ishmael, starts mocking the celebration. And Sarah gets bent out of shape again. And she goes back to Abraham again and says, "This is your fault. Do something about it." And what she says in particular is, "Get rid of them." Well, now, wait a minute. Abraham's been around this young man that he has looked at as his son for maybe 20 years by now, almost. And this is not a boy anymore. This is a young man. When you read this story in the Bible, it's not apparent that this is a rather well-developed young man. But Abraham sends him away with what? Some food and a bottle of water. Not a little bottle of water, a big jar of water. But the big jar of water eventually runs out. And so now Hagar gives up. And she says to her son, "You stay here. I don't want to be there when you die." And she goes off. As the Bible puts it, about a bow shot away, an arrow shot away. And she lifts up her voice and weeps. And an angel talks to her and says, "God has heard the lad." Not that he has heard you, but I am talking to you. God has heard the lad. Now, we aren't told what the lad has said. But the angel has said, God has heard him. Now, you've got to realize that this young man of yours is going to live a life of conflict. The Bible puts it the way that says his attitude is going to be against everybody around him, and everybody else's attitude is going to be against him. That doesn't sound like a very gentle life. But on the other hand, God had told Abraham that this young man would have a major nation from him. So there is a promise involved. So here you have the angel talking to Hagar. You have God talking to Abraham. It's interesting as you go through some of these stories, And as I went through all of the King James Version of the Bible and noted every single verse that has the word angel in it, and there's over 70 of them, that there's a lot of interplay between God speaking to a person and an angel's presence. We'll speak about that in one or two of the other stories we have here. This is not something where the angel is operating independently of God, obviously. So what we have now is a young man out there in the water, in the wilderness, without water. And how is this going to be resolved? Well, the angel tells Hagar that Ishmael will become a great nation. Then God opens her eyes, and she sees a well of water there where she could fill her container, and they could both drink. And who is the nation that comes from Ishmael? All of the Arab civilization. It's amazing, isn't it? And where was that conflict? Between the Arabians and the Semitics, the Israelites. One choice created quite a problem for God. That one choice by a woman that wasn't willing to wait for God's solution. But the angel brought good news on two occasions. And that's one of the things that the angels do. They rescue us. They rescue us from our own mistaken choices. The story of a well that mysteriously or miraculously appears when needed has a counterpart in a modern story from China. It's from a book called Guide's Greatest Angel Stories. And I have several from that book that, if we have time, we'll go through. If we don't, we have another opportunity later. Grandpa's Angel Guide. Astride his dapple gray Chinese pony, Grandpa entered a small town about 4 days' journey from his destination, Chengdu, the capital of the largest province in China. He stopped in front of the post office, dismounted, tied the horse to a post, and entered to ask for his mail. "Is there mail for Pastor Wang Ho Ren?" he asked the man behind the window. "Yes, there are letters addressed to him, both in his Chinese name and in his English name, M.C. Warren. Letters from home." It was always a comfort on these long, lonely trips to receive letters from his family. Of course, Grandpa was not a grandfather yet. In fact, and it's written by a lady named Sylvia Lee, and it says, "My mother was one of his three small daughters at that time. As he turned to leave the post office and catch up with his luggage carriers and cook boy, a Chinese gentleman stepped up and asked, 'Are you a Seventh-day Adventist?' Smiling warmly in his friendly manner, Grandpa answered, 'Why, yes, I am. How did you know?' 'Well, I happened to see the return address on your letters,' he answered. 'I would like to ask you some questions about your religion.'" Now, with an opening like that, wouldn't that be a grand one? "I'd be glad to answer any questions you have to ask me," offered Grandpa, for it was always a joy to him to tell others about the Bible. After a lengthy talk at the gentleman's home, the man asked, what hotel are you staying in tonight?" "I'm not staying here tonight. I plan to go on to Gingdaipu." "Gingdaipu," exclaimed the man, "you can't make it there before dark." "Why not? Isn't it only about 5 miles from here?" They use the Chinese term li, L-I, for the distance, but that's about 5 miles. "No, it is 40 li from here. You shouldn't plan on going on tonight." "But I must. My luggage carrier and my cook are all gone ahead." Grandpa bid the man goodbye and hastened out of the town onto the road alone. His two-hour delay had put many miles between him and his carriers. He covered 20 li, however many that is, and before dark, and stopped at a small village to inquire whether his carriers had passed through. Finding that they had, he entered a small shop to buy a paper lantern. The first three lanterns were so flimsy that they fell apart when a candle was put into them. Finally, he found one that would hold a candle. Fear gripped his heart as he started alone and unarmed up the mountain in the dark. As he breathed a prayer for protection and guidance, Grandpa's fear gradually went away. Alas, the candle in his lantern lasted only till he was at the top of the first ridge. He had a spare candle, but no way to light it. He hadn't anticipated the wind blowing out his first candle. On the long descent to the ravine below, Grandpa decided it would be safer to get off and lead the horse down the flagstone steps. Although traveling in the dark was slow, the thought occurred to him that it had its advantages. At least he could not be observed by lurking foes as easily as he would have been with a lighted lantern. At the bottom of the hill, there was a stone bridge that crossed a little stream. Grandpa noticed that about 30 steps up the incline from the bridge was a house, for he could see shafts of light coming through the cracks. The house was about 40 feet wide, and the middle section had a large double door which opened as Grandpa drew near. Two Chinese men emerged from the doorway. In his best Chinese, Grandpa asked politely, "May I bother you to light my candle from yours?" Willingly, they lit the candle, and one of the men asked, "Where are you going?" "Gin Dai Pu," answered Grandpa. "I am also going to Gin Dai Pu. We can travel together." The man who had spoken looked good and honest. Grandpa was relieved to have him go along with him, as robbers were known to be operating on this road. With the lanterns in their hand, Grandpa and the Chinese man started up the road. Grandpa deliberately kept the man talking as much as possible because he had a theory. If the bandits were local men, they would not rob someone from their own community. "I'm glad to be able to go along with you," the Chinese man said. "It is dangerous on this road." Why should he say that? He doesn't have that much to lose. All he has are grass sandals and plain cotton clothing. He probably has no money to lose at all. Here I have almost 40 silver dollars with me. I should be the one who's thankful for someone to go with. On they traveled many miles. Then when they came to a path that led away from the main road, the Chinese man said, "I must go this way now. Goodbye." "I thought you were going to Gin Dai Pu," Grandpa, disappointed, for he enjoyed the stranger's company. "It is just a little way from here," the man answered. "From here on, there is no more danger. I must go this way." After watching his companion disappear into the darkness, Grandpa continued on the main road. Suddenly, he came to a standstill as he saw a light. No, two lights coming toward him. These were not paper and candle lanterns, but expensive kerosene lamps. It must be a group of men. As the lights drew nearer, Grandpa realized that the second light was only the reflection of the lantern in the water of the paddy fields. As the light drew still nearer, he saw with a sigh of relief that the group of men he had imagined was only one man. Grandpa stepped aside to let the man pass. A tingle went down his spine as a hand reached through the darkness and took his horse's reins from him. Then he realized it was his faithful cook boy out searching for him. Tired and weary, they came to Gin Dai Pu. The innkeeper seemed greatly relieved when Grandpa arrived safely. He said a man had been robbed and seriously injured on that same road only a day or two before. That night, Grandpa knelt beside his cot and thanked the Lord for taking care of him along the dangerous country road. So where does the angel fit into this picture? Grandpa himself did not know till his return trip. Always endeavoring to make friends and renew acquaintances, he planned to stop at the house where he had gotten the light for his candle. There was a stone bridge, and there, about 30 steps above the road, should have been the house. But there was no house. Furthermore, no house had ever been there. There was not even a leveled spot where a house could have stood. God had provided. He had sent an angel to be with him that night. Grandpa recalled the words of the stranger. "I am glad to be able to go with you. It is dangerous to travel this road alone." He now realized that it had been not his own safety, but Grandpa's that the traveler had been thinking of. The disappearing house. There's another familiar story in the Bible about Balaam. Remember that name? Balaam and his donkey in Numbers 22. Balak had persuaded Balaam to help him destroy the Israelites, and Balaam was on his way when his donkey saw an angel with his sword drawn standing in the path they were traveling. Three times Balaam tried to get that donkey to move forward. And three times he beat him. And God gives the donkey a human voice. "What have I done unto thee that thou hast smitten me these three times?" Balaam then argues with the donkey for a while. Then God opens his eyes, and he too can see the angel standing in the road. After some conversation with the angel, Balaam is told to go with Balak's men, but to speak only what God says to him. Can you imagine the story that angel had to share with the other angels when he got back to a confab in heaven? Talk about a memory. In Judges 6, we encounter Gideon harvesting his grain in secret when he is surprised by an angel sitting under an oak tree. Don't think there's any other place I've seen any other description of an angel sitting. "The Lord is with thee, thou mighty man of valor." Gideon expresses his doubt that God is really with them, considering that the Midianites are constantly attacking them. Then God himself enters the conversation. "Go in this thy might, and thou shalt save Israel from the land of the Midianites. Have not I sent thee?" Gideon asked for a sign to verify that it is indeed God who is speaking to him. Then he goes to prepare a sacrificial gift for him. When he returns, the angel directs him to put it on a rock. The angel then touches the flesh and cakes with his staff, and fire comes out of the rock and consumes the cake and the meat. The angel then disappears, and God assures Gideon that he will not die. God then tells him to destroy the altars to Baal and cut down the groves surrounding it that his own father built. You can read the rest of the story of Gideon in Judges 7 and 8. There are so many of these stories in the Bible that we would probably be here until about 3 this afternoon. I don't think that's what you had in mind when you came this morning. I have another one that I want to share with you that expresses God's love for far more people than just those that share our religious views. This is a story from an American Marine in Korea in 1950. So it's a little bit out of date, 73 years ago. It's a letter from this Marine to his mom. "Dear Mom, I wouldn't dare write this letter to anyone but you because no one else would believe it. Maybe even you will find it hard, but I have to tell somebody. First off, I'm in a hospital. Now don't worry, you hear me? Don't worry. I was wounded, but I am okay. The doctor says that I will be up and around in a month, but that's not what I want to tell you. Remember when I joined the Marines last year? When I left, you told me to say a prayer to Saint Michael every day. You really didn't have to tell me that. Ever since I can remember, you always told me to pray to Saint Michael, the Archangel. You even named me after him. Well, I always have. But when I got to Korea, I prayed even harder. Remember the prayer that you taught me? Michael, Michael of the morning, fresh core of heaven adorning. You know the rest of it. Well, I said it every day, sometimes when I was marching or sometimes resting, but always before I went to sleep. I even got some of the other fellows to say it. Well, one day, I was in with an advanced detail way up on the front lines. We were scouting for the commies. I was plodding along in the bitter cold. My breath was like cigar smoke. I thought I knew every guy in the patrol, when alongside of me comes another Marine I never met before. He was bigger than any other Marine I'd ever seen. He must have been 6'4" and built in proportion. It gave me a feeling of security to have such a body nearby. Anyway, there we were, trudging along. The rest of the patrol spread out. Just to start a conversation, I said, 'Cold, ain't it?' Then I laughed. Here I was with a good chance of getting killed any minute, and I'm talking about the weather? My companion seemed to understand. I heard him laugh softly. I looked at him. I have never seen you before. I thought I knew every man in the outfit. I just joined at the last minute, he replied. My name is Michael. Is that so? I said, surprised. That's my name, too. I know, he said, and then went on. Michael, Michael, of the morning. I was too amazed to say anything for a minute. How did he know my name? And a prayer that you had taught me. Then I smiled to myself. Every guy in the outfit knew about me. Hadn't I taught the prayer to anybody who would listen? Why, now and then they even referred to me as Saint Michael. Neither of us spoke for a time. Then he broke the silence. We're going to have some trouble up ahead. He must have been in fine physical shape, for he was breathing so lightly I couldn't see his breath. Mine poured out in great clouds. There was no smile on his face now. Trouble ahead, I thought to myself. Well, with the commies all around us, that is no great revelation. Snow began to fall in great thick globs. In a brief moment, the whole countryside was blotted out, and I was marching in a white fog of wet, sticky particles. My companion disappeared. Michael, I called in sudden alarm. I felt his hand on my arm, his voice rich and strong. This will stop shortly. His prophecy proved to be true. In a few minutes, the snow stopped as abruptly as it had begun. The sun was hard, shining like a disk. I looked back for the rest of the patrol. There was no one in sight. We lost them in that heavy fall of snow. I looked ahead as we came over a little rise. Mom, my heart just stopped. There were seven of them. Seven commies in their padded pants and jackets and their funny hats. Only there wasn't anything funny about them now. Seven rifles were aimed at us. "Down, Michael," I screamed and hit the frozen earth. I heard those rifles fire almost as one. I heard the bullets. There was Michael still standing. Mom, those guys couldn't have missed, not at that range. I expected to see him literally blown to bits. But there he stood, making no effort to fire himself. He was paralyzed with fear. It happens sometimes, Mom, even to the bravest. He was like a bird fascinated by a snake. At least that was what I thought then. I jumped up to pull him down, and that was when I got hit. I felt a sudden flame in my chest. I often wondered what it felt like to be hit. Now I know. I watched him. He seemed to change. His face was shining with a terrible splendor. He grew bigger, his arms stretched out wide. Maybe it was the snow falling again, but there was a brightness around him like the wings of an angel. In his hand was a sword that flashed with a million lights. Well, that is the last thing I remember until the rest of the fellows came up and found me. I don't know how much time had passed. Now and then I had but a moment's rest from the pain and fever. I remember telling them of the enemy just ahead. "Where's Michael?" I asked. I saw them look at one another. "Where's who?" asked one. "Michael! Michael, that big Marine I was walking with just before the snow squall hit us." The sergeant said, "Kid, you weren't walking with anyone. I had my eyes on you the whole time. You were getting too far out. I was just going to call you in when you disappeared in the snow." He looked at me curiously. "How did you do it, kid?" "How did I do what?" "This Marine named Michael and I were just..." "Son," said the sergeant kindly, "I picked this outfit myself. There just ain't another Michael in it. You are the only Michael." He paused for a moment. "Just how did you do it, kid? We heard shots. But there hasn't been a shot fired from your rifle. And there isn't a bit of lead in them seven bodies over the hill there." I didn't say anything. What could I say? I could only look open-mouthed with amazement. The sergeant spoke again. "Kid," he said gently, "every one of those seven commies was killed by a sword stroke." That is all I can tell you, Mom. As I say, it may have been the sun in my eyes. It may have been the cold or the pain. But that is what happened. Love, Michael. On a personal note, I've had one experience that was shared by my daughters. This would have been about 45 years ago, something like that. We had driven north from Oregon back up toward our home in Auburn. We had taken a back road around Mount Adams, headed for Mount Rainier. And that road was not a good road to be on. Very rough rocks, tough road. We got home safely, and the next day, we're driving from our home toward Auburn, and as I make a right-hand turn, I'm feeling something a little bit wobbly in the car, and I pull off to the side, and I look over the tires and the wheels, and I find on the driver's side, the left side of the car, and we've just made a right turn, there are no lug nuts on the car, on the wheel. None. Well, the girls get out and they start looking along the road. Kathy and Tambry and Patty found all four lug nuts. I don't remember how far back they had to go. Kathy, do you remember how far you had to look? Patty, you don't. I would say probably within no more than 200, 300 feet, maybe less. What kept that wheel on? And why were all four of those lug nuts within that short distance of space? God's angels are in charge. And I want you to remember that you have an angel with you every minute of the day. Now, we didn't get to talk about very many of the stories from the Bible, and there's a lot more of them there, and maybe another time we can deal with them. And there are some from the New Testament as well. And the ones I prepared for today, which were quite a few more than you heard because we ran out of time, were all from the Old Testament. But consider God's gift to you. An angel lives with you.